From Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology News, this is the GenCast Network. Bringing you compelling and in-depth interviews with the biotech industry's leading researchers, newsmakers, and thought leaders. This week on the GenCast Network. Gen's Editor-in-Chief John Sterling talks to Dr. Charles Gumbar from Wyeth Research about the company's novel Learn and Confirm approach to pharmaceutical product development.
Dr. Charles Gumbar joined Wyeth Research in 1997, where he is currently Vice President and Team Leader for Development of methyl naltrexone. The product, which is an investigational drug that is being studied as a treatment for the peripheral side effects of opioid analgesics, does not affect the pain relief provided by these analgesics. Prior to this current assignment, Dr. Gumbar was the Vice President, Project Management, responsible for all R&D projects in neuroscience and women's health and bone, as well as drug development training for all project team members. Previously, he's held positions at Smith Klein Beecham, Sterling Winthrop, and Knoll Pharmaceutical. Dr. Gumbar, why is the pharmaceutical industry not bringing more drugs to market in light of the fact that billions of dollars are spent globally on new product R&D?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question and a question that obviously everybody in the pharmaceutical industry has been wrestling with for some time. And I can't tell you that I know the answer. I can tell you that I have my opinions about it. And certainly my feelings are that the types of diseases and the types of molecular targets that we're going after now are much more difficult and much more novel than in the past. And because of that, the probability of success has been decreasing pretty much across the board. And so it's just becoming much more difficult to get compounds all the way through the process. And at the same time, in parallel with that, the bar keeps getting raised in terms of the amount of data that are required by regulatory bodies, boards of health around the world. And so there's a lot more safety data that's needed, a lot more long-term data. If you look at the numbers of patients that are needed in a filing these days, it's much greater than it used to be.
Okay, now with this added level of complexity due to new products that are being discovered, that would appear to indicate something about the current model of drug development. So would you describe the current model of drug development and explain why it might not be sustainable?
Yeah, the traditional model of drug development, and I'll be focusing mostly on clinical drug development, has been what we refer to as the phased approach, where there's phase one, where you do some testing in normal volunteers, followed by phase two, the early testing in patients, and then phase three, your larger pivotal trials. And that was a convenient categorization that worked for quite some time. It served a useful purpose, but our feeling on this is that it has begun now to stifle thinking, and that has put people more in sort of a cookie-cutter approach to drug development. And if you combine a cookie-cutter approach with the fact that we're going after more novel targets and more difficult diseases, that just doesn't work, because types of questions that you're going to have to ask are different. And so that's why we started questioning whether or not we really needed to use that paradigm for clinical development or not, and really try to get it back to science-driven development, where you're really defining what are the key questions that have to be asked and doing the kinds of studies that can answer those questions, irrespective of if you can answer the question in a normal volunteer, in a patient in an early study, or in a patient in a later study. So the cost of development is really what's not sustainable. So we have to get a lot smarter about developing our products, testing our products, and developing our products. And we can't do that if we're stifling thinking and using more of a cookie-cutter approach.
And I've read that Wyeth has implemented a new drug development strategy called Learn and Confirm. Could you talk about this concept? For example, what is it, and where did it come from, and why did Wyeth find it so intriguing?
Yeah, well, I had to go back a few years now because it was in early 2005 that Wyeth, the corporation, undertook a very, very broad initiative to basically question everything that we do. And not just in R&D, but on the commercial side of the organization as well as looking at our own infrastructure and our culture and so on, to really think about what we needed to do to prepare ourselves for the future, because our world was changing. We knew that the world was changing, and we needed to be ready for that and to lead change even within our own industry. And so I had the pleasure of co-leading that effort within R&D. And so what we did was we just started then going back to basic principles and asking, again, just very, very simple questions. Why do we do this? Why do we do that? And in many cases, the kinds of answers were, well, you know, that's just the way you do it. We've always done it that way. And that was never an acceptable answer. And so what we did was we did interviews internally. We talked to people from other industries. We talked to our regulatory colleagues at FDA and subsequently at the EMEA as well, and just started to really – we wanted to start with a clean slate and say, okay, what do we really need to do? And it was actually in discussions that we were having with senior folks down at FDA that they started using the terminology learn and confirm, and we – quickly realized that this was not their terminology either. It stems from a paper that was written by the late Lou Scheiner about learning and confirming in clinical drug development. And he wrote the paper a long time ago, back in 1997. And so we didn't make up the terminology, actually. What we did, though, is we did find it very intriguing because it really is easy to grasp that what you have to do when you have a promising molecule is you need to learn what that molecule really can do. What is the best application of that molecule? What is the best disease? What is the best subpopulation, perhaps, that agent should be used for in that disease? What are the sources of variability that might modulate whether a patient responds or doesn't respond? And get to these questions and answer these questions, and then when you really have learned enough about the molecule, then you need to go and confirm what you've learned. And in the traditional drug development paradigm, that would be the phase 3 trials. That would be your pivotal trials that you're going to use for registration. But if you've done all of the learning that you need to do up front the right way and do it more exhaustively than we've done it in the past, then confirming really should be that the probability of success during the confirm phase should be much higher than it has been in the past. So it was a nice concept to understand. It was easy for people to understand. It got back to, again, science-driven development, which is what Lou Scheiner's thesis was all about, is to get back to just fundamental science-driven development. And we found that very intriguing to the point where we've actually organized our development efforts into or around this learn-and-confirm concept.
Okay, now let's look at this concept a little more closely, and to some extent, I think you've already answered this, but let's look at the learn phase first. What's the specific objective of the learn phase, and what are its major components?
Yeah, we actually, what we're trying to do is to unleash a lot of the intellectual power that we have in the scientists and physicians that we have that are doing drug development at Wyeth. And, you know, and this could be applied in other companies as well. And so the key components are really to, at a very high level, are to identify what the right molecules are to bring forward into the confirm phase and to have a broad enough understanding of those molecules so that the benefit-risk ratio that you're going to need in order for it to be a successful molecule, not just from an approvable perspective, but from usage in the clinic and therefore in the marketplace, that it's really likely that you're going to get that. And so you need to understand some real fundamental things like dose-response relationships. And it was very, very interesting in a lot of the discussions that we had when we were looking at all of this, is that it really was a lot of the simple fundamentals that were not being done adequately in our industry. And I think dose response is for me the best example, that over and over we as an industry have gone headlong into pivotal trials before we really understood what the dose response relationship looked like for the efficacy as well as for the side effect tolerability profile. And if you don't know that, you're going to make mistakes and you're going to have failures, late stage failures. And that's what we're trying to avoid. So it really is structured around key questions and key pieces of information that we have to have. In order to do that the right way, we need to be using all of the tools that are available to us and that are becoming available to us, and not just talk about them, but use them. So things like adaptive clinical trial designs, because the trial designs that you can use during LEARN can be different than the trial designs that you use in pivotal trials. You have much more latitude during LEARN as long as you realize that those are not your pivotal trials. Those are the trials that you are doing to really learn about your molecule. So using adaptive clinical trials, using the tools that are coming from translational medicine, biomarkers, and so on. There's lots of talk about them. We have to really start using these tools to make sure we understand our molecules.
Now, let's look at the second part of LEARN and CONFIRM. What are you looking to accomplish during the CONFIRM phase?
What we're trying to accomplish during the CONFIRM phase is what we've termed just as operational excellence. Because if LEARN has been done properly and you really know about your molecule, you know how it should be used, you know what the right dose or doses are to test in the confirmatory phase, what you really need to do is to get those trials done as efficiently as possible. So in the CONFIRM phase, there's much less, and I'm going to overstate this a little bit, but there's less science and more operations, okay, because those are the larger trials. So being able to get the patients, get the data that you need, be able to analyze the data, and just do all of that as efficiently as possible so that you can actually decrease the cycle time during that CONFIRM phase and increase the probability of success, okay? If you go in with more confidence, then you should be able to put the operational tools that you need in place to be able to do that.
Now, you'd mentioned before, as you were exploring this new concept, that you talked to people from other industries, and I think that is really fascinating. And I guess the question would be, are there lessons that you learned from other industries, such as aerospace, logistics, electronics, that the LEARN and CONFIRM approach might apply to new drug discovery and development?
Yeah, there definitely were. And I could tell you, it was fascinating. And of all of the pieces of the project that we did, that was probably the most fun. I have to say that I was a little skeptical going and speaking to some of these firms, but it was fascinating, and it was interesting what we did learn. And so I can give you some examples of things that we did that we're now applying within the LEARN and CONFIRM concept. So in aerospace, for instance, the parallels between what they do when they're developing a new product and what we do when we're developing a new product were actually astounding to me. There were many, many parallels. But what they had done over a decade ago was they had changed the way that they structured the teams that do the development and made the team the focal point and made the team much stronger and much more autonomous. And we were not doing that. We were more line function driven, and then, you know, teams were almost, I don't want to say an afterthought, but the teams were not very strong. It was the line function that was strong. And so we're piloting with a few teams what we're calling high-impact teams, where we're putting higher-level people on these teams and really letting them run and do the job. And in fact, post this project to come up with LEARN and CONFIRM, that's what I'm doing right now, is I'm leading one of those pilot teams right now. So it was just around how we should structure things and how we should govern things internally. In speaking to logistics companies or even, you know, just companies that do delivery services, okay, which are highly logistics driven companies, it made us ask questions like, well, wait a minute, what do our core competencies need to be? Because we do things like move a lot of things around the world. Our trials are global and we need to move things around the world. And we were doing a lot of that, managing a lot of that ourselves. Is that our business? Is that our core competency? No, we're scientists and physicians. And so it started getting us to really look at everything we do and question, is it a core competency or not? If it's not a core competency, should we just buy the service rather than trying to manage those kinds of things ourselves? There were other issues around the way we govern things and the way we make decisions internally that we learned from some of these other companies. But it really was a fascinating process.
Now, if you were to look at this whole concept of learn and confirm for a second, if someone were to ask you, how does this represent the major paradigm shift for drug development in Wyeth, how would you respond to that?
Yeah, it really is. It's really trying to take some of the, in my view, take some of the shackles off of the teams that we have that are developing our products and really give them the latitude that they need to be able to be innovative and to be able to ask the right questions, ask different types of questions, and use different types of tools to answer those questions. What we've done in the past is when a molecule would come out of discovery, we would say, okay, this is a molecule for schizophrenia, and then we would just run like anything to develop that molecule all the way through the process for schizophrenia without ever doing some real science in the clinic to understand, is that really the right thing that molecule should be used for? Okay, we would just make this assumption that this compound is going to be successful and it's going to be successful for that particular disease based on what we could do preclinically, which in some cases is not very predictive, okay, even though you know you had a 10% chance or less that that was ever going to be the case. So let's do the science that we need to do in early clinical development. This is the learn phase, to do some testing around that. Is that really the right disease for this? If it is, fine. But then even within that, are there subpopulations? What are the characteristics of the patients that we need to understand to make sure that this agent is going to be used most effectively in the clinic? So it really is, I know I've said it before, but it keeps coming back to this. The paradigm shift for me is really bringing it back to science-based development, hypothesis-driven development, rather than saying, okay, I'm going to do phase one, then I'm going to do phase two, then I'm going to do phase three, which really doesn't tell you anything about what questions you're really trying to answer.
Right. Okay, so my final questions would be, one, where is Wyeth on the timeline of incorporating Learn and Confirm into its drug development operations day-to-day? And secondly, looking down the road a decade or so from now, how will Wyeth be different from today, assuming the successful adoption of Learn and Earn into the company's R&D activities?
Yeah. What we've done, we spent a tremendous effort in 2006 on the initial implementation of this. So we've reorganized development around Learn and Confirm. And what I mean by that is we now have teams that specialize in the Learn phase or the Confirm phase. The teams that are working in the Learn phase are actually very, very different than development teams that we had previously. Previously, we would have a team pretty much for each new molecule that came out of discovery, and then that team would be responsible for just that molecule and taking that molecule through. And we didn't feel that was the right approach. And so we've organized these learn teams for the most part around disease areas. So for example, we have an Alzheimer's learn team. And that Alzheimer's Learn team actually manages the development, the early development of all of our Alzheimer's molecules. And so they become our disease experts, and you get learning across compounds. And there are lots of other benefits we feel in organizing this way. Whereas in Confirm, again, with the idea that operational excellence is what you're after, you're looking for a different kind of person. different kind of skill set, someone who really is operationally oriented and can drive this thing through as efficiently as possible. And those teams are single product oriented teams. So they are driving a product through those later phases of clinical development. So that's all in place. To go along with that, we changed our governance processes and the governance bodies that we have with the senior executives that are overseeing the entire development portfolio. We've done a lot of training around training for the people that are populating these teams, much more active control of who is on these teams, much more thought going into who is on these teams. So all of that we did during 2006. There were a lot of initiatives that were underneath this umbrella of Learning Confirm that needed to get implemented as well. For example, one of the concepts that was key in allowing us to learn as efficiently and as quickly as we can was what we've called early clinical development centers. And these are another way that they've been described as phase two super centers. And so we've now contracted 10 of these centers around the world, in India, China, Eastern Europe, Latin America, and we're getting them in the United States as well, where we have access to a large number of patients so that we can get very quick answers to key questions around our product in the clinic as early as possible. So we've done all that. We also decided that we did want to contract with a delivery service to take care of all of our clinical materials logistics. That's now in place. That master services agreement is in place, and we're well along the way. So a lot of that, the tactical parts of this and the organizational parts of this were put in place in 2006. What we're looking for now is to continue to expand the change in thinking, especially on the learn side, because all of the organizational changes are not just for the sake of changing the organization. They're for the sake of driving a change in thinking. That's really what we're after. And so now that's what we're focusing on mostly in 2007, is to really start getting much more novel development strategies, especially for early clinical development.
I'm John Sterling. Thanks for listening. Now we'd like your thoughts on some of the points raised during the podcast. Please go to www.genengnews.com/blog and answer the following questions. Why do you think the worldwide pharmaceutical industry is not turning out more new pharmaceutical products? And any suggestions for how the industry can improve its performance? Bye for now.
To learn more about topics discussed in this GenCast, or to listen to previous GenCasts, visit our website at www.genengnews.com. New GenCasts are posted every week, Thursday, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Next week's guest, Dr. David Wishart, leader of the Human Metabolome Project. For the Gen Publishing editorial staff, I'm Jonathan Ellinghouse, saying thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in again next week to the GenCast Network.